From NPR, it's Latino USA. Disaster destroys work and creates it. Today, a visit with migrant workers who follow oil spills and other catastrophes.
Acá está Alcides Olmo, Junior Aipar, Martire Alvarez.
This crew started work days after the Gulf oil spill, and there is still much to be done.
All the oil spills I worked before, if you put them all together, they're not even one quarter of this.
Also, some thoughts on the workers we don't always see, los invisibles, or invisible ones, in New Orleans.
Too strong to let them take forever. They may have pushed it down, but you're a little warrior. My girl, soldier, woman, winner of a war. You weren't gonna take it no more.
And finding the junkyard jewels of Maya Azucena. That's coming up on Latino USA. I'm Katie Davis. Stay with us.
From the Latino USA News Desk, I'm Sean Collins. Some call it the war on drugs. Some just call it a war. And this week there was news. Vicente Fox, the former president of Mexico, posted on his blog that it was time to legalize drugs. Fox wrote, "Legalization does not mean that drugs are good, but we have to see it as a strategy to weaken and break the economic system that allows cartels to earn huge profits." Vicente Fox joins a growing list of Latin Americans and others who are critical of the current policies that have escalated the military and police presence on the U.S.-Mexico border, even as the death toll mounts. And the U.S. drug market consumes drugs and lives with a seemingly unchecked appetite. In constitutional law circles and in taverns across the nation, the discussion of the 14th Amendment continues to grab attention, ink, and airtime. Senator Lindsey Graham, Republican of South Carolina, said on Fox News a few weeks ago that he was looking at the citizenship guarantee in the 14th Amendment as a way to combat illegal immigration. That drew immediate support from some quarters and ridicule in others. Here's a moment from The Daily Show with Jon Stewart.
Birthright citizenship, I think, is a mistake, that we should change our Constitution and say if you come here illegally and you have a child, that child's automatically not a citizen. They come here to drop a child. It's called drop and leave.
No, you call it drop and leave. I believe they call it the miraculous birth of their child.
This week, the Pew Hispanic Center added data to the debate. A new report based on Census Bureau numbers from 2009 estimates that the undocumented comprise slightly more than 4% of the adult U.S. population, but their children make up a much larger share of the newborn population, approximately 8%. The report notes that the population of the undocumented in the U.S. skews very young by almost a decade, and that the birth rates are higher than the national average. You can read the Pew Hispanic Center's report on our website, latinousa.org. More numbers, these from Church. Young Latinos in the U.S. are increasingly less likely to identify themselves as Catholic, according to a poll released by the Associated Press and Univision. Overall, 62% of Hispanics say they're Catholic, but only 55% of young Hispanics identify themselves that way. The generation gap extends to social issues as well. The poll found that while about a third of older Hispanics support same-sex marriage, 46% of younger Latinos do. This week in Los Angeles, the L.A. County Sheriff refused to release 8 boxes of records dating back some 40 years to the time of the killing of journalist Ruben Salazar. The L.A. Times columnist and news director for KMEX-TV was killed by a sheriff's deputy at an anti-war protest in 1970. Some questions have never been answered about the killing, including why the deputy used a high-velocity 10-inch projectile that was not to be used against crowds. A spokesman for the Sheriff's Department this week says releasing the documents now would set a precedent regarding law enforcement records. Life on and off the soccer field will be highlighted in the week ahead.
La vida siempre nos va a caer a goles. Por eso es que todos los días tenemos que levantarnos convencidos de que el juego va 0-0.
Filmmaker Marcel Raskin's soccer drama Hermano will have its North American premiere at the opening night of the Los Angeles Latino International Film Festival August 19th. The film tells the story of two friends who compete for a single spot on the Caracas Soccer Club. Founded in 1997 by Edward James Olmos, this year's festival runs through August 25th in Los Angeles. You can stay connected to news throughout the week. For updates on your mobile device, follow us on Twitter, where we're Latino USA, all one word. Or to listen to interviews and features on demand, visit us online at latinousa.org. Katie's back in 30 seconds. I'm Sean Collins in St. Louis.
It's Latino USA. I'm Katie Davis, filling in for Maria Hinojosa, who's away on vacation. Along the Gulf of Mexico, water gives and water takes away. People leave and others arrive. 5 years after Katrina and 4 months after the oil spill, we now bring you two stories. First, the dirty work. Slogging through the tarry waters and beaches of the Gulf, local fishermen who have these jobs are glad for them. And then there is a group who traveled to do this cleanup work. They are disaster migrants who move from oil spill to oil spill. And as reporter Annie Coryell of the Feed Into Worlds Project found out, many are also just grateful to have the work.
In Port Fourchon, Louisiana, there's a white sand beach that stretches for miles. Pelicans fish above the water, and occasionally a dolphin crests over a wave. It sounds crazy, because as we've seen on TV all summer long, the biggest spill in history is still washing up oil here. Workers, 20 of them, shovel a plot of sand, revealing shiny patches of crude oil.
What these people are doing here now, they're trying to find the oil. It's underneath. That oil came first, and then when that water comes up, they're trying to... We got some sand over. So what they're doing is they're digging, and the good sand, they put it away, and then trying to catch that oil and put them on their bags.
That's the supervisor of one cleanup crew.
My name is Victor Carrias. I'm from Guatemala. I've been living in South Carolina. Now I'm living in Hammond. I got on this job 3 weeks, and I've been living here in Louisiana for about 3 years.
Victor, who's just 22, followed his parents to the U.S. when he was 18, and soon after he found work cleaning up oil. He's now brought his mother, father, brother, and sister to work on the cleanup. Like many of his crews, his group started working together within days of the disaster, and they're all Latino.
Acá está Alcides Olmo, Junior Aybar, Martire Alvarez, Wilfredo Ballesteros, Fanny Herrera.
Most workers are from the Dominican Republic, but there are also people from Puerto Rico, Cuba, Honduras, and Guatemala.
Hola. Hola. Mucho gusto.
Many crews just like this one are cleaning up the coast of Louisiana. Their boss is a Colombian woman, Marta Mosquera. Her company, Tamara's Group, has a contract to supply workers to clean up camps in Louisiana and Mississippi, and she says they're 90% Hispanic. It's likely the scenario is repeated all along the Gulf Coast, but BP says it isn't tracking race and ethnicity. The Latino workers here come mostly from new immigrant communities around New Orleans, Kenner, Bridge City, Gretna, and this summer they're staying in rentals in tent cities on the coast as they do this work. Many came to Louisiana to help rebuild after Hurricane Katrina. Then some began to make a living cleaning up after oil spills, like Victor. He remembers one in 2006.
The last time it was on the Mississippi River. Two ships went crash and being a big oil spill from Chalmette Belle Chasse, all the way on the river, and we've been cleaning up all the area over there, just trying to keep that all out.
And the other one?
Tulsa, Oklahoma. One of the oil plants have an explosion, and the water came, and all the oil went through the city. And I was over there, and our job was pretty much pressure wash the oil to the house and try to get it cleaned up, for get ready for demolition.
Victor is what you could call a disaster migrant. The BP spill is his fourth oil spill. He told me that normally, days after a spill, contractors show up at churches to recruit workers. But this time, everyone knew what had happened immediately.
This is like, I've never been seen something like this happen before. And all the most spills I worked before, if you put them all together, they're not even one quarter of this.
If you added them all together, they wouldn't even be a quarter this big?
Absolutely not.
Victor and his crew members say they realize their health risks involved in this work. After all, they have to wear boots and gloves, and they have to be decontaminated when they leave the site. Already, at least two workers have died from heat stroke. But they say that in this economy, it's worth the risk. They make $12 to $15 an hour, plus overtime. And they get temporary housing and $30 a day for meals.
They all love them. If they're here, they're for a reason. That reason is they need this job. And everybody here to make a living.
In June, the U.S. Labor Secretary, Hilda Solis, visited Victor and his crew.
My purpose here is to assist the workers with respect to safety and protection, and the fact that we're protecting all workers regardless of migration status, because that's the federal law. If there are complaints where people are not being paid adequate wages or loss of overtime or wage theft, or if they feel that they're in a harmful situation where they may be exposed to contaminants or something that might cause them fear or a health risk, then they should call our OSHA office.
At the same time, there's a strong message that only people who are here legally can apply. Latino men mill about pickup spots and job centers looking for cleanup work. Some have come all the way from Texas, but most are turned away when they reveal they're undocumented. So Victor says he feels lucky.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that there is a lot of people that they don't have documents, then they don't have a job for the same reason, and I know that they will be so happy if they get a chance to come and do this job. But BP got the rules, and the government got the rules, and we have to be like that.
At Port Fourchon, all the workers are legal and have passed E-Verify, the government's electronic status check. Nevertheless, the sight of Latinos being bussed into remote cleanup sites here and all along the coast has aroused suspicion. In one case, leading a local sheriff's office to call in immigration to check that the workers were documented. The Louisiana Department of Homeland Security office insisted the reason behind the visits was to make sure the jobs BP created were reserved for the local workforce. But some of Victor's workers here don't take the visits in stride. This is Junior Ivar from the Dominican Republic. He works in oil refineries when he's not cleaning up spills.
Yo creo que deberían tener cierta consideración porque ahora mismo no se trata de un caso de migración sino de una emergencia nacional. Y esto obviamente afecta a toda la ecología del país. Y yo creo que en estos momentos deben ser un poco tolerantes ante la situación.
He says he thinks the government should take into consideration that this is a national emergency. It affects the country's entire environment, and they should be more tolerant. He says it's not the moment to crack down on undocumented immigrants.
En este caso solamente se requiere de una emergencia aquí. Aquí no es momento de atacar precisamente a los indocumentados, porque son personas de trabajo y aquí sencillamente lo que estamos colaborando con la limpieza del medio ambiente.
If it's one thing these workers know, it's that even in the worst catastrophe lies opportunity. For the country, the BP oil spill may be the opportunity to support the people who do its hardest, dirtiest work. For Latino USA, I'm Annie Coriel.
Annie Coriel comes to us from Feet in Two Worlds, a project of the Center for New York City Affairs at the New School that brings the work of immigrant journalists to public radio.
Year 5 of the post-Katrina reconstruction of New Orleans is upon us, and the dirtiest little secret of the recovery is that our rapid progress owes a tremendous debt to the Latino immigrants who have labored hard to rebuild the Big Easy.
When Katrina hit New Orleans, the stream of people out of the city was staggering. Less noticeable was the group of people arriving. Writer Jose Torres Tama has been watching this ebb and flow.
It's as if the immigrants are living in a parallel universe as invisible laborers in the shadows. It's science fiction. For years, Los Invisibles have been physically visible everywhere on rooftops and numerous construction sites, but the undocumented status of many has transformed them into a transparent people that are not recognized as fully human. This condition has made their suffering an obscure, painful story that most prefer to ignore because foreigners are classified as aliens in this country, extraterrestrials from the planet other with a marginalized existence. I recently interviewed 2 day laborers. Both men told stories of being cheated by ruthless contractors and local businesses. One worker with a wife and 3 children worked 2 weeks at a major hotel in the French Quarter. But when the promised payday arrived, he and a dozen men in his maintenance crew were told to leave the premises by the manager, who threatened to call immigration. He was left with no money to pay for his rent or buy food for his family. The other worker, still a teenager, arrived weeks after Katrina hit. He worked 12-hour days while sleeping 14 to a trailer meant to house 1 person. 9 months later, a huge metal dumpster fell on his left hand. The contractor who hired him refused to call an ambulance. Fortunately, his working compadre had a cell phone, but by the time he arrived at the hospital, half his hand was practically sliced off. Doctors recommended severing his entire left arm to protect from a major infection, but the lone African-American surgeon, who had a son the same age, intervened and performed 5 miraculous surgeries to reattach his hand. During his convalescence, this injured worker had a major epiphany that led him to become an activist. Both men have joined the Congress of Day Laborers to fight for the rights of immigrant workers who have contributed their blood and sweat to rebuild a city that has turned a blind eye to their struggles. The Southern Poverty Law Center has reported that 80% of the immigrant labor force that reconstructed New Orleans was essentially robbed of their rightful wages. The insidious tactic of employers calling immigration instead of paying rightfully earned salaries is commonplace in the slave labor fiesta still taking place here. Fears of deportation have kept thousands mute, but these men have undergone a mythic transformation from silent martyrs to vocal activists. With the New Orleans Workers' Center for Racial Justice and other immigrant rights advocates, they are fighting to have an ordinance passed that will criminalize wage theft. Theirs is an epic battle to humanize immigrants who have been rendered invisible by a city and a people that have benefited greatly from their labor. If we dared to count their combined salary losses over 5 years, we are talking millions of dollars, maybe billions, stolen from men and women who have repaired a once very broken city. New Orleans, its citizens, and a new mayor need to bring the immigrants out of the shadows, give them the visibility they deserve in the Crescent City.
Jose Torres Tama is a writer in New Orleans.
I've been walking way past sunrise.
Coming up, Maya Azucena makes her own musical trends. So stay with us. It's Latino USA. I'm Katie Davis, filling in for Maria Nojosa,
who's away on vacation. And now a way to free yourself from the withering heat, a cool splash of music. Last year, Maria sat down with singer-songwriter Maya Azucena of Brooklyn, and we offered their conversation as respite.
If there's one place in these United States that looks, smells, tastes, and sounds like the future of our country, perhaps it's the Flatbush neighborhood of Brooklyn, New York. It's a place where immigrants from all over the world live together. And it was in that vibrant mix that singer Maya Azucena found her voice.
Waiting on a new time, waiting for a new sign, waiting on the news line, waiting for the sunshine, waiting on a long line just to get your check signed, working on the chain gang, waiting for a good thing.
Maya Azucena was raised in an environment that embraced diversity. Her father grew up in Mexico and Brazil, and her mother was, as she puts it, an extremely strong, independent black woman. Maya Azucena was classically trained as an opera singer at New York's Performing Arts High School. But she's charted her own path as a singer-songwriter, taking inspiration from her diverse upbringing. And Maya Azucena joins me now from WNYC Radio Studio in New York. Welcome to Latino USA, Maya.
Thank you so much.
Did you think as a little girl, you know, I'm going to become a musician. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to make it out of Brooklyn. Were those dreams that were real for you?
In an interesting way, it was not even a dream so much as I started singing when I was 4 years old. I was really taking myself seriously, practicing songs and singing them from beginning to end. You know, for when my parents were still together, I would put on shows and then perform for anybody and everyone I could.
Too strong to let them take it forever. They may have pushed it down, but you're a little warrior. My girl, soldier, woman, winner of a war. You weren't gonna take it no more. You tried to enslave your body. You were struggling.
You have one of the things that I love is, you know, you have such a unique style. You have a unique sound. You have a unique vibe. When did you, along the path, realize that you could actually work with your own style? You know, oftentimes when, you know, you're trying to make it in the world of arts and there's a lot of commercial pressure, how are you able to understand, no, this is my voice, this is my style, this is how I want to sound? How hard was that?
The more I performed and the more I wrote, you can see your own trends. And then when you look back at the trend of what you tend to write and what you tend to speak about and what you tend to reach for in a melody, you know, the average mean is your sound. And in terms of the industry, you know, pressuring somebody into a certain box, I did a lot. My whole career really has been exercised pretty much outside of the music industry. And with that said, I really didn't suffer from the intense pressure that these major labels put on artists to kind of fit into a kind of cookie cutter and, you know, artist slot.
I am the moon. You are the waves. I am the sun. You are the leaves. I am the sky. You are the light. I am the light. And you are the night. And I'll set you free.
Well, you definitely are not. And you can't be put into a cookie cutter artist slot, that's for sure. And one of the songs that really stood out for me was Set Me Free. I mean, to me, I loved hearing this song, which, you know, had this, evoked this kind of Negro spiritual. And then a couple of songs later, you know, then there's this song, Like No Other, which I wrote down. I was like, Minnie Riperton, Roberta Flack, you know. And then I was also, there was a kind of me that was like, Maya is also like a female Raul Midon, which I found really interesting.
Oh, that's
too.
The biggest compliment ever. I love Raul Midon. Wow. Yeah, in fact, all the names that you know mentioned are super special to me. And again, I really feel like maybe what's unique about my journey is that I focused more on the soul and the contact with people, connecting with people, than I have with trying to imitate or trying to become something. I feel the most powerful thing you can be is yourself. And so if you understand how to develop yourself and the gifts that you have, then you will stand out and you will be unique and you will be successful at what you attempt to do.
Thanks so much for joining us on Latino USA, Maya.
You are welcome. Thanks for having me.
Maya Azucena's latest CD is called Junkyard Jewel. It's available from Purpose Records.
And finally, your letters. Last week, we aired a documentary about activist movements in Puerto Rico. We spoke with nationalist Rafael Cancel Miranda and remembered Lolita Lebron. They both shot 5 members of Congress in 1954. We also spoke to students pressing for greater democracy in the U.S. territory. David in New York responded on Twitter saying he was quite offended by the glorification of terrorist Lolita Lebron and the leftist independence movement in Puerto Rico. His fellow New Yorker Donald agreed in this email. Never did you mention the crimes these nationalists committed, killing innocent people who were working. Never did you mention that not all students were for the strike. Never did you mention that many citizens were against the strike. And most of all, you never mentioned that the independents are a tiny minority of voters. Most Puerto Ricans do not want independence. And finally, Maria Hinojosa recently shared her thoughts about the power of music to help us get through difficult times. Maria listens to the 70s band Malo, and her friend loves Lady Gaga. That sparked Elizabeth in Virginia to write in and say she listens to the song State of Mind by Raul Midon.
Used to sit and worry about the future. Worrying about the future don't change the past.
This song reminds me that everyone wants a piece of that American pie and that it's okay to work for what you believe in and to want the things I want, especially with all the hatred out there towards people who are a darker shade of beige, like me. An American citizen from Peru who has been here since the age of 3. I actually got berated in Virginia and had to explain that I am a citizen. I think I'll start carrying a copy of my citizenship certificate.
Because it's all a state of mind. It's all a state of mind. Yeah. It's all a state of mind.
We love hearing from you, so keep up your kudos and critiques. Email us at lusa@npr.org or follow us on Twitter at LatinoUSA, all one word. Or the old school way, and that's my school, just call us at 1-800-535-5533. And for this week, that's LatinoUSA. The program is produced by the Futuro Media Group, online at futuromediagroup.org, in association with KUT Austin. For Maria Hinojosa, I'm Katie Davis. Join us again next week for another edition of NPR's Latino USA.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and from the George Lucas Educational Foundation, creator of Edutopia, a source of what works in education. Learn more at edutopia.org. And Lumber Liquidators, whose flooring includes pre-finish and stain solid hardwoods, bamboo, cork, and laminates. Information at lumberliquidators.com. And from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, supporting the 2010 Community Health Leaders, working to improve health nationwide at communityhealthleaders.org. This is NPR.